We are in ancient Egypt, the city of Memphis, in a hall in the palace of the king. Ramphis, the high priest of Isis, is in consultation with Radames, the captain of the guard. Ramphis reveals that the Ethiopians are threatening Egypt once again. He's awaiting word from a messenger who will tell him more of what's going on. The priests have consulted Isis. The decision as to who's going to lead the army has been made. Ramphis knows who it's going to be, but before going to inform the king, he says pointedly to Radames, "He's nobly born, he's young, and valiant." To have this honor would be the greatest thing ever to happen to Radames. If he were chosen, he'd conquer and return crowned with a laurel wreath, and it would all be for Aida. "For you I battled, for you I conquered," he'd say to her. And now he has his love song. "Heavenly Aida, you are the ruler of my whole life. Home to your country I would return you, back to the sweet-scented land you love. Then with a garland I would adorn you, build you a throne near the sun." Radames is, of course, a warrior, but he's also a lover, and this is probably the most beautiful love song for tenor that Verdi ever composed. It's challenging to sing those sequences of rising phrases, beginning with the very first utterance of the words Celeste Aida, Heavenly Aida. How to make those phrases end as gently as possible to match the quiet, airy accompaniment. And at the same time, the character's machismo has to emerge as well, with the brazen confidence of the born warrior. Amneris appears. She's the pharaoh's daughter. She notices that Radames seems somehow ecstatic. She knows very well that the woman who would stand by his side would be lucky indeed. He makes the excuse that he's dreaming of the glory that might be his if he's chosen to command the army. Now Amneris attempts to work her wiles. Isn't there something else in Memphis that he longs for? Now he wonders if she's discovered his real feelings. And she says to herself that she'd die if she had a rival for him. In this excerpt, you hear the motive that signifies Amneris, an agitated rhythmic pattern typical of her emotional nature. The rhythm is ba-bum, ba-bum, ba-bottom, ba-bum, ba-bum, ba-bottom. Now suddenly Aida appears. She's the daughter of Ethiopia's king, but having been captured, she's now Amneris' slave. Radames betrays his feelings instantly, just by gasping, "It's she." Amneris gets the picture, although she's not absolutely certain. Aida, is she my rival? Is he in love with her? In her words to Aida, we see her deviousness. "I'd never consider you a slave. You're more like a sister to me. Won't you tell your sister why you're crying?" Aida makes the excuse that she's frightened for her country. Here's the opera's first ensemble. Amneris and Radames' lines under Aida's, and Aida's soaring in her legato phrasing. We hear what this role of Aida really is about musically. Control of long, beautiful, flowing lines over a wide range, and always, of course, with the most beautiful, warm voice. The king, the priests, and army officers all now appear. The king announces that the messenger from the Ethiopian front has arrived. Here's his news. The Ethiopians have been plundering Egypt's fields, burned their harvests, and are now advancing on the city of Thebes. The messenger calls the Ethiopian king, Amonasro, an indomitable, ferocious warrior. The king initiates a call to arms, and he's seconded by Ramphis. It's interesting to hear the same sort of melodic line sung by two voices of the same category, back to back, so to speak. What's most important is sheer solidity of sound and assertiveness of manner. Let death and battle be our only war cry, everyone sings. Guerra, guerra, war, war. Those words signal a thrilling ensemble, including the first of several rises to high C that Aida must deal with in this opera. The ensemble concludes with Amneris' exhortation, Ritorna vincitor, return victorious, repeated by everyone else, Aida included. The stage empties quickly, with only Aida remaining. Her monologue begins with that cry, Ritorna vincitor. She can't believe she's spoken those words. Let me give you this whole sequence so you can get a sense of the scale of this music and the sense of Aida being completely exposed and alone when she repeats the words Ritorna vincitor. Note that Verdi sets them with no accompaniment until the last syllable. What does it mean that Radames returns victorious? It means capture and enslavement for Aida's people and her father. That's what tortures her. She finally falls to her knees and prays to the gods to pity her suffering. I want to play you two more sections of this aria. First, when Aida is at her most convulsed with horror over these conflicts in her mind. As a result, her line is tense, with sudden octave leaps indicating the extreme emotions that she's feeling at this moment. Now you'll hear the prayer, Numi Pieta, Gods have pity. This is Aida at her most heartfelt. The purity, warmth, and ease of her singing at this point can't be an end in themselves, however. She's still singing about her fatal love and her wish for death to end her suffering. We move to the sacred temple. This is a spectacular scene, but it begins quietly with a priestess of Ptah who's usually placed off stage. Almighty Ptah, the breathing spirit of life in us all, we here implore thee. This is a hypnotically beautiful refrain. Its sinuous line creates both mystery and serenity. A solitary soprano voice with simple harp accompaniment followed by the solemn intoning of the priests. After a ceremonial dance, Radames appears before Ramphis and the other priests. He's presented with a sword that has been consecrated. The dignity of Ramphis's lines here and Radames's response together create one of the most mesmerizing moments in the whole opera. When the priests join them, the buildup in intensity is thrilling, but it lasts barely more than a minute, just enough time for the gathering of these impressive forces to make the necessary impact on the listener.
Sovra Letizia sua.
Acts 1 and 4, the second act of Aida is in two scenes. In the first, we're in the apartment of Amneris. Her female slaves sing about Radames' glory and fame. Amneris gives way to her longing for Radames in a few short phrases. Ah, come to me. Ah, come, my love. Enslave me. Inflame my heart with love. Singers live in fear of this treacherous phrase, which comes out of nowhere. Verdi demands a dreamy attack on a high G, which is not something often required of the dramatic mezzo voice. The phrase is really the equivalent of a lovesick sigh. Some young Moorish slaves perform for Amneris' pleasure. Here, Verdi gives particular emphasis to percussion instruments in his quest for an exotic atmosphere. There's also a sprightliness to the melodic content here. Amneris orders everyone away. She sees Aida approaching. Now we're ready for one of the most exciting duet scenes in any Verdi opera, one of surprisingly few major scenes for soprano and mezzo that he ever wrote. Amneris intends to find out for certain whether Aida is definitely her rival for Radames' love. She uses every bit of deception and insinuation she can muster to get to the truth. Just as in Act One, she starts by pouring on the sweetness. Verdi helps the singer here. The line brings out the velvet in the mezzo voice, and the gentleness of the line creates a cajoling, confiding feeling. Aida again justifies her misery by thinking of her father, her people, and the danger that they're facing. But love will heal your present misery, coos Amneris. And Aida sings to herself, ah, love, joy and torment, sweetest elation, burning despair. Now Amneris gets down to business. Was it one of the warriors fighting against your country who has kindled longing in your secret heart? She mentions that some warriors have been killed, one of whom was Radames. Aida cries, I'll mourn him forever. Playing with Aida's emotions now, Amneris tells the truth. Look in my eyes. I meant to trap you. Radames is alive. At this news, Aida falls to her knees, thanking the gods. What a spectacular vocal moment. Amneris' brief words, unaccompanied, and then Aida bursting forth with a joy that's hair-raising over the full-bodied orchestral sound.
Oh!
Now Amneris has found out what she needed to find out, and she is enraged. I'm your rival, Pharaoh's daughter. Aida's about to answer that she, too, is a king's daughter, but she restrains herself. She falls at Amneris' feet and makes her feelings clear. Pity me. Yes, I love him with an enormous love. You're happy, you're powerful, but I have only this love to live for. To that, Amneris responds with a really vicious coldness. Hatred and vengeance now rule in my heart. This is a wonderful contrast. Aida's music, low in her range, contained, seemingly very humble, and Amneris' lines, for which imperious is the only word. The army is soon to appear, and Amneris must be there to greet them. You follow me, she tells Aida, and I'll show you what it means to compete with me. My love for him will perish within the grave, responds Aida, as her voice rises to her second high C of the opera. Amneris, with a blockbusting A flat of her own, then sweeps out. Aida has a reprise of her words from Act One. Hear me, ye gods, pity my suffering. After all that heavy-duty emotion, matched by big-scale singing, Verdi chooses to end the scene quietly. That's typical of him in this opera, the brilliance with which he creates these compact musical dramatic structures that bring out every shade of character. We move to the gate of the nearby city of Thebes. The king has arrived there with his entire court. The women declare, "Now dance, Egyptian maidens, to music sweet and holy. Honor the leader we hail." The priests are there, offering praise to the gods. To the sounds of trumpets, the troops march in. It's the moment Aida audiences wait for. Two separate trios of trumpeters, their great moment in the sun, playing what is probably the best-known music in the entire score. There are ceremonial dances, which I'll give you a bit of here, all vigorous, with a kind of thrust and forward motion that maintain the vitality of the scene wonderfully. ¶¶ The king embraces Radames, and Amneris crowns him with a laurel wreath. The king offers to grant any wish Radames might have. That wish is for the Ethiopian prisoners to be brought before the king's throne. When the last prisoner appears, Aida gasps. It's her father. Everyone sees her rush to him, but he whispers, "Don't betray me." The king orders him to come forward. He describes Egypt's victory over the Ethiopians, adding, "At my feet in the dust of the battle lay our king, dead from his wounds." He's keeping his identity a secret, for the moment at least. And now he begs the pharaoh, "Mighty king, noble and glorious, show us mercy. Today we are laid low by fate. Tomorrow such might be your lot." Aida repeats these words along with the other prisoners. Let's hear Amonasro alone in this, one of the noblest melodies of the opera, at a rare moment when Amonasro isn't being vehement and aggressive, but instead can sing with all the warmth and velvet in his voice. Now I'll give you the repeat of this music with Ramphis and the priests asking the pharaoh for death for the prisoners and all the other principals adding their feelings at this moment. Through all this, Radames is gazing at Aida longingly, and that look of his is not lost on Amneris. This is one of the defining moments of Aida when it comes to the grand, not to say monumental, quality of the work. Radames has another wish. He wants the prisoners to go free, despite the objections of Ramphis, who tells the king, "They're brave warriors, with vengeance in their hearts. They'll take up arms once more." But Radames assures the king that this won't happen, since Amonasro is dead and all hope for Ethiopia is gone. Ramphis has a suggestion. "At least, as a pledge of peace and security, keep Aida and her father here." This the king does willingly, at the same time giving Radames Amneris' hand in marriage. He even declares to Radames, "One day you'll rule over Egypt with her at your side." This is, of course, Amneris' moment of triumph. She says to herself, in effect, "Take that, Aida." The real words are, "Let the slave try to steal my love, if she dares." Amonasro manages to take Aida aside to whisper, "Be brave. Wait for happier days. Our time of revenge is dawning." And from that comparatively quiet moment, the intensity builds to a glorious outpouring from orchestra, chorus, principals. This is opera at its grandest, the finale of the triumphal scene. In Act 3, we're on the banks of the Nile, on a moonlit night, with one of the temples of Isis close by. The priests are heard in the temple, praying to Isis. A boat arrives, bringing with it Amneris and Ramphis. He's bringing her to the temple. It's the night before her marriage. She's there to pray that Radames will give her all of his heart. Ramphis asks that she pray until morning. He will stay with her. As they enter the temple, Aida cautiously approaches the riverbank. It's here that she's asked Radames to meet her. She wonders what to say to him, knowing that if he's coming to say a final farewell, she'll have no choice but to throw herself into the Nile. That's the only way she'll find peace. These words lead into her aria, one of the gems of Verdi soprano writing, at the same time one of his toughest pieces, O Patria Mia, O My Homeland. We're always so concerned about whether the soprano manages the treacherous high C that we don't pay enough attention to the text, which is very beautiful. In her nostalgia for Ethiopia, Aida recalls the sky, the meadows and flowers, the valleys. She believes that she'll never see any of this ever again. It's amazing to think that this aria wasn't even written for Cairo. Verdi created it for the La Scala premiere. We can only imagine the extraordinary voice of his beloved Teresa Stoltz, the first soprano to sing it. Aida's surprised to see her father. How he manages to escape his captors and rejoin her at the riverbank is something we're not told, but never mind. He's worried for her. He knows she and Radames love each other and that Aida is in Amneris' power. He believes she can win this battle and that she'll see her homeland with Radames as her bridegroom. Amonasro reminds her of the destruction that Ethiopia has endured. His army's waiting to hear his orders. Everything is ready and victory is certain. All they need to know is what path the enemy will be taking. And this is what Amonasro is asking his daughter to find out from Radames. She's appalled. "No, never," she cries. Amonasro now explodes. "Then, you Egyptian armies, reduce all our cities to ashes and dust," he cries. This is bad enough for Aida to hear, but it gets worse. "Rivers of blood drown all our ruined and beaten cities. Mark me, shades of the dead are rising. All of them point at you and cry, 'Destroyer of our land!'" Aida screams out, "Pity, father!" And now the worst of all. "Do you not see your mother's hand raised to curse you? You're no longer my daughter. You're the slave of Pharaoh." Here it's easy to feel a bit sorry for the singer, simply because he's up against a genuine orchestral barrage. Verdi also puts much of the line in a fairly low range, and many are the Amonasros who simply shout through the whole episode. Fortunately, Piero Cappuccilli in this recording sings the written notes. Lutti di Falls on her knees before her father, begging him to pity her, not to curse her. "I'll be worthy of you and of my country," she sobs. Amonasro relents, telling her, "Think of how your conquered, suffering people will return to life only through you." And he hides in the palm trees as Radames appears. He's ardent towards Aida from the first moment, but she's sad, even a little cold. What hope is left? You're going to marry Amneris tomorrow. But he doesn't care about that. The gods know he loves only Aida. With the pride of a princess, she snaps back at him. "Don't stain your name with such a lie. I loved a hero. I couldn't love a liar. Do you imagine you'd escape the charms of Amneris? Escape the king's will, the people's wishes, and the priests in their fury?" Radames is so intoxicated by his love for Aida that he tells her what he expects to happen. He expects to be victorious in the battle, and when he's won, he'll kneel before the king, reveal his true feelings for Aida, and be rewarded with her love. How naive can you get? Aida's the realistic one here. "You don't fear the rage of Amneris? Her revenge will fall on me, my father, on everyone. The only way things can work out for them is to escape." This is a bit of a shock to Radames. Now Aida takes the reins of this dialogue. She starts to turn on her feminine charms, luring him into the idea of fleeing what she calls the oppressive heat of this barren desert. She wants him to accompany her to the land of the virgin forests and fragrant flowers. That's where they'll find true ecstasy. But to abandon his country, his gods, the place where he first loved Aida, Radames wonders how he could do it. She continues to woo him with her plan. Before, we saw the noble Aida, the desperate, proud princess. Now, this is as close as we'll get to Aida the seductress. She succeeds through sheer sensuality. This is also probably the most intimate moment of the entire opera. How cleverly Verdi uses a limited vocal range at the start of each of these magical phrases, followed by the slow rise to the sustained and very, very quiet high G. Radames is powerless to resist. When Radames doesn't respond positively, Aida insists that he doesn't love her, and she orders him to the altar with Amneris. But he proclaims, "No, never!" And finally he agrees, "We'll flee together across the desert. Here misfortune rules forever. There the heavens smile with love." She seconds that emotion, and they launch into a classic operatic moment, bursting forth with their excitement at the idea of being together. If Verdi had been writing this decades earlier, it would have been a moment for a jaunty umpa-style cabaletta. This episode in Aida is more compactly structured, but ultimately just as effective. Now Aida pops the question. By what pass can we avoid the troops of marching soldiers? The road we've chosen for my men to attack will be deserted until morning. And what road is that? Asks Aida. The gorges of Napata. Now Amonasro bursts forth from his hiding place. The gorges of Napata! There will I post my men! He reveals his true identity, not just Aida's father, but also king of Ethiopia. Radames instantly realizes what he's done. You? Amonasro? You? The king? No, this isn't true. It's a nightmare. Aida tries to calm him, and Amonasro actually tells Radames Aida's love will bring him a throne. But all Radames can do is cry out, I'm dishonored. For you, I've betrayed my country. Amonasro urges Radames to follow him and Aida to where the Ethiopian soldiers are waiting, and soon he'll have everything he's longed for. But suddenly, Amneris emerges from the temple. Traditor! Traitor! She cries. Amonasro attempts to stab her, but Radames comes between them. Ramphis appears, calls for guards, and Radames urges Aida and her father to get away. As Ramphis orders them followed, he takes Radames' sword from him, and Radames declares, Priest, I'm in your hands. This is the phrase a tenor lives for in this opera. The finale, with big high A's that he can hold without competing with the orchestra. It's a moment, though, that takes every bit of steel in the singer's voice, a kind of all-out, brazen defiance. The first portion of Act 4 is known as the Judgment Scene. It belongs to Amneris. There are a number of tour de force episodes for mezzo in Verdi, but nothing comes close to this. She's on stage throughout. It lasts about 20 minutes, and it runs the gamut of emotional heights and depths. We see Amneris in a hall of the royal palace. She's anticipating Radames' trial, but first she has a few moments alone to brood over what's happened. Although Aida's father was killed, Aida herself managed to escape. Even after Radames' betrayal, Amneris still loves him and is desperate to save his life. She calls to the guards to bring him in. He comes before her in chains. She starts out fairly gently, begging him to defend himself at the trial and indicating her willingness to go to the king to ask that his life be spared. Radames declares that he doesn't intend to defend himself, but that he's innocent. He has no desire to live any longer. Tu devi vivere, she cries. You have to live. I love you, and I'd give up everything for you. This really is magnificent stuff. Verdi so understood Amneris' desperation, and if the mezzo can command the large range, the ascents to the top, and the immediate plunges into the lower register, she can make a searing impact. The same, of course, is true of Radames in his response. But Radames won't live without Aida. He assumes that Amneris has had her killed. Amneris lets him know the truth. Aida is alive. Radames hopes that somehow she's with her people once more, in safety. Swear to me that if I save you, you'll never see her again. Three times Amneris asks Radames to renounce Aida, and three times he refuses. She bursts out in despair, mixed with her desire for vengeance, while he proclaims that he's dying for Aida, and no rage of any human being can touch him now. He's led away to the trial, leaving Amneris beside herself with misery. As the priests ready themselves for the trial, Amneris curses her jealousy and anticipates that if Radames dies, her life will be nothing but unhappiness. She knows Radames is now in the power of the priests, who frighten her. The priests call on the goddess Isis for guidance and to let her justice speak through their words. Amneris bursts forth in her own prayer to the gods to save Radames. The priests and Ramphis are offstage with Radames, with Amneris on stage, listening to their every word. There now comes a sequence, heard three times. Each time, Ramphis intones Radames' name, and each time he accuses him of a different crime. First, it's betraying his country's secrets to Amonasro. Then, it's deserting Egypt's army the day before the battle. Then, it's breaking his oath to his country and his king. For each charge, Ramphis orders, "Disculpati, defend yourself," and there is an eerie silence. The priests then declare, "Traditor, traitor," and Amneris cries, "Have pity, gods, you must save him." Amneris's response is one of the toughest moments of her entire role, in that she's got to produce staggering intensity and power right in the middle of her voice, which is never easy to do without unhealthy forcing of the sound. Priests emerge from the trial only to confront Amneris. She accuses them of murder, calls them pitiless tigers, and finally curses them, "May the vengeance of heaven descend on you." Verdi wanted the stage split in two for the final scene. The upper level is the temple once again, the lower level the tomb with Radames alone. He's lamenting the fact that he'll never see daylight or Aida again. He wonders where she is. Suddenly, he sees a figure moving in the dark. It can't be. It's Aida. He's incredulous, but there she is. When she saw the cover of the tomb being raised, she managed to slip inside, having resolved to die with him. For someone so beautiful to die, for loving him, this is too much for Radames to bear. But Aida is totally serene. "Look, the angel of death is there. With golden wings," she murmurs. The two of them sing, "The beauty of heaven is now open wide, and now our souls fly up to the light of our eternal day." These simple, meaningful words were Verdi's own. He'd asked Ghislanzoni for what he called something sweet, ethereal, quite a short duet, a farewell to life. He didn't want anything flamboyant or grand. He wasn't happy with Ghislanzoni's version, so he did it himself. And no poet could have managed it better. There's nothing in Verdi more touching than the rising, floated phrases sung by Aida and Radames as their lives ebb away. Above them, the priests and priestesses intone a prayer to Ptah, and Amneris appears, praying for peace. "It's not my worst opera," Verdi said of Aida. "In the whole history of this art form, was there ever a greater understatement? Aida retains its beauty and allure more than 130 years after the Cairo audience first applauded Verdi's genius." Certain English language passages from the libretto of Aida were read in the translation of Edmund Tracy. Thank you for listening.